I'm Jesse Robertson from the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and this is Alaska Voices, a place for communities to connect through conversation in order to build a better tomorrow for Alaskans and the world.
Originally, I grew up in Gakona, Alaska.
Tyonek.
Egypt.
Idaho.
Grand Pard.
St. Lawrence Island.
St. Paul.
And I'm here with my student.
My science buddy.
My teacher.
My homie.
I'm his daughter.
I am Sean Carter. I'm 46 years old, and I am with my co-worker, Emily Fort.
And my name is Emily Fort. I'm age 43, and this is being recorded in Reston, Virginia at USGS, U.S. Geological Survey, and Sean is my colleague.
Do you ever think about the short shrift that the work that we do might get in the future? I always think about in the past couple of years, we've had a lot of fires that got a lot of attention. Extreme weather gets an awful lot of attention. And then the recovery seems to always be really short-sighted. And I know in our line of work, there's a lot of discussion and hand-wringing and attention and time spent on how we can provide science to help with recovery. But in my view, it's always been a little bit short-sighted because those fires come back and those hurricanes come back. The natural part of the equation with climate change impacts always seems to be a luxury item. Do you think that's ever going to change?
I don't know. I'm always, I think, a little bit of a cynic, and it's hard to imagine because I think in today's world with technology, I mean, I'm sure you've seen articles and probably your own experience with your own kids where getting kids out into nature and appreciating the natural world is something that many don't. Figuring out how to broaden that and get people to find value in that and to not fence it off as something we need to worry about just in like the national parks or something, kind of these iconic, select, small, protected areas overall comparison to the size of the country and how we recognize the value of that. The world is what we have once we destroy those natural areas. It's very difficult to get them back. And it, I think, unintended consequences and ramifications that we still don't understand. But
yeah, I always think about the parks and like Glacier National Park and the fact that even just in a relatively short amount of time, the glaciers have receded and are likely to recede outside of the park. And the ability of my kids not to see the same Glacier National Park that children of previous generations would have been able to experience. It just doesn't seem to be an imperative compared to some of the other needs that people have in their daily lives.
Yeah, I think so. So what advice would you give to future scientists or someone who's interested in getting into this arena?
I think there's some value in trying to not really be overly prescriptive in the kind of science activities that you pursue. I think it's important to keep an open mind. I also think that it's important to have whatever you want to call it, a larger goal or a kind of a higher calling for why you do what you do. I personally believe that you need to really be inspired, have something in your work that really inspires you, that you believe in, that you want to achieve. I think with regard to folks that really want to get into climate change research, what I would advise folks is to take the long view. I think it's really easy to get tangled up in kind of short-term, frustrating dialogue that we have as a nation, and even globally. But if you look back at just the attitudes and perceptions that have changed in the past decade, it's been significant, and I think that that'll continue. I often see this tendency of these technocrats that feel like people can always engineer their way out of any problem. And as much as I don't want to admit that, I recognize that attitude, and who knows? There's a lot of opportunity for innovation. Always has been in science, but now more than ever. When you look at the technology we have available, the scale of our challenges, the brain power that we have, the training, the global connectivity, in some ways, we are probably the best prepared that we've ever been to address this challenge if we get our act together.
Do you think over time we'll have more certainty, or at least more kind of structure to give people to frame decisions and choices?
I don't know. Right now we're in this weird situation where people expect even less than 24-hour news and information. And you see it even in science. The science literature is getting fast and furious. Things are distributed so quickly, and people are taking less and less time to really digest their information. And I think it's only going to be when people are willing to not be so quick to judge and so quick to form their opinions, and also not assume that they can understand things based on listening to their favorite, reading their favorite source of information, or listening to their favorite show, or just repeating opinions of other people. So I think it's a cultural thing. And I have hopes that someday we will be able to kind of maybe have some more free time to have more thoughtful discussion and be less judgmental. And also, I think, just be more appreciative of science. I think it's going to take a while because, in my experience, there's been a lot more anti-science movements that have taken shape, and perhaps they've always been there and now they're just more visible. What's the kind of legacy that you would like to have? What would you like to leave behind that you think would really, you would look back and really be proud of?
We still have focused a lot on just the basics, you know, making our science available, which is critical and important. But I think spending some time and energy in thinking about how we present the data, how we visualize it, how we integrate it, and how we can use that as a communication tool to both managers and to indigenous communities and to even the general public. I think we have a lot of information that we could make much more accessible than we do.
So making the light bulb go off for folks about the value of being able to access and use that information?
Yeah, building on the investment we've already made, and then adding on to that to make it that much more important because people can actually use it. Right now we have, you know, a bunch of files loaded up into a database, but so how do we pull all of that together? How do we knit it together?
Sounds like a good goal to have.
Alaska Voices builds bridges by creating a space where community members, friends, policymakers, and scientists can share stories and place-based knowledge. This project was developed in partnership with StoryCorps and was funded by the Alaska Climate Adaptation Science Center. Additional funding was provided by the University of Alaska Fairbanks Chancellor through a generous gift from the Bentley Family Trust to the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Alaska Voices would not be possible without the help and efforts of an amazing group of people. Our producer and audio engineer is Kelsey Skonberg of Mossy Stone Media. Our podcast and outreach specialist is Mike DeLue. And our website designer is Carolyn Rosner. If you are interested in more conversations or information, please visit our website at alaskavoices.org.